Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. It's John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Firstly, good evening, John.
Good evening.
Good evening, indeed. As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number for over the next 27, 28 minutes is 087-179-1032. We'd love to hear from you. It's 087-179-1032. Lots to get through first. We have another email in. I know you have a copy of it there too, John, from a gentleman that wrote to us a few weeks ago about the podcasting, is it?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's just a little blip here and there. Unfortunately, we were trying to sort that out for you. And Albacete, I think, is the way they pronounce the name in Spain. It's a good old Will in Helen, Albacete in Spain. Good evening to you. He does listen in on the live programs most of the time, but unfortunately with commitments and things like that, he has to do it by podcast. And the odd time he doesn't get it, so we'll check into that for you. So in the meantime, you can always text us on 087-179-1032.
Yes, the same number also for WhatsApp, if you are abroad, like Will is, in Spain. That's 087-179-1032, or write to us, astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And, of course, we're also available live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie. So we're going straight now into what to see in the sky. And before we get to the planets, John, a few weeks ago we spoke about the supernova in the Pinwheel Galaxy. Apparently it's still fairly bright-ish. If you have even a small telescope, you should be able to pick it out. It is magnitude 11.9, which is not quite as bright as it was way back in May when it was at 11.1, and it's also getting slightly more red. Supernova usually stay bright for weeks, and sometimes they vary a lot in brightness, but this one seems to be fairly steady. And like other supernova, it's fading slowly. Well, no, this will fade relatively slowly or relatively quickly. It's up there in just in the Big Dipper M101, which is just at the first. If you go from what we would normally consider the normal formation of the plow, the handle, the first star at the beginning of the handle.
That's right.
It's around about there. Now you wouldn't pick it out. You won't see it with the naked eye because it is very dim, way down to too dim at 11.9, but even a relatively small telescope will pick it out, and you will see the whole galaxy in a relatively good pair of binoculars. The sky is nice and dark.
If it's nice and dark, this is the problem around the lit up city areas. If you're maybe down in the Sahara, which would be a good place to watch, and some other desert areas as well, super to see, and you might get to see it with the naked eye. If you're looking to see where the International Space Station is, it's not back in our skies until July the 9th, and it will follow through until July the 27th. Mercury, unfortunately, it's almost directly behind the sun from where we are at the moment, so it is out of sight, unfortunately. Venus is still the one to watch, but it is creeping down in the sky in the evening, lower and lower as well, so you want to get out there and have a quick look just as it gets dark. It's -4.7, which is quite bright. It's in Leo, under the sickle of Leo, and it's the brilliant evening star, which is the first one that really appears. And if you're looking through a telescope, if you're lucky enough to have one or a pair of binoculars, it's a dazzling white crescent thinning and enlarging, so it's not the full disc, so the sun is only shining on it probably about half or thereabouts. Mars, on the other hand, it's over to the left of Venus, and it's at 1.7 on the magnitude scale. It glows weakly. It's a little up to Venus's upper left, and you can see it once your eyes become accustomed, as it is disappearing pretty quickly as well. Jupiter, it's a morning star at the moment, minus 2.2. Saturn, it's plus 0.9. It rises about 11 p.m. And by the beginning of dawn, it's the steadiest telescopic view, high in the south-southeast. Uranus is low in the northeast by the beginning of dawn. And Neptune, it's high in the southeast just before dawn. So really, the one I think to watch for just at the moment, Ben, is Venus. Mars, which you can also catch to the top left of it, Jupiter in the morning, and if you're really looking for planets, you can also get to see Saturn as well. So that's still pretty good to see if you're up early in the morning as well. So Mercury, unfortunately, will be out of sight for a little while, so before it comes back into view again. So just to remember the date for the ISS, July the 9th until July the 27th. So looking forward to that, of course. We're watching June disappear very quickly.
Yes.
Last week we were just in and around the solstice time.
Yes. And now the nights are closed. I'll get to that in a moment.
I'm really interested to see where we are with this, because there was only a couple of seconds in it last week.
Yes. So, as you mentioned, John, the ISS is back on in evening skies on July the 9th. But if you're up in the early hours from about the 29th of June, a couple of days' time, about 3 in the morning, there's a few passes. There's a few passes from about, on the mornings of 29th of June for a while until about the 9th of July. Then there'll be those passes, as you indicate, come around at more sociable hours in the evening. Now we have the moon. It's currently up. It's a 65% waxing gibbous moon. It's currently above the horizon here. It will be due south of us very shortly at 8:28 p.m. from our Dublin vantage point. And it will set in the early hours of tomorrow morning, just about 1:45 tomorrow morning. Well, it will have grown slightly to 67%, but by the time it arises again tomorrow afternoon, 4:15, the phase will be 73% waxing gibbous as we head towards the full book moon on Monday, the 3rd of July in the early afternoon. The book is after the deer, when they do their rutting and they lose their antlers, so that's why it's called the book moon. Apparently, it's the first what they call super moon. Although I think I hate that expression, because when you mention it to people, they think they're going to see this absolutely massive moon in the sky. But I think it just means that it's about 10% larger than usual, because it's a little nearer than usual. It's when the moon is near the Earth, when that coincides with the full moon. That's what we call a supermoon. It's the first of four this year.
It's still nice to see, though. Yeah, as it creeps up.
It is, but you wouldn't, unless you were a moon expert, you wouldn't really notice the difference, I don't think. But if you take a photograph and then at some other time, a month later, take another one and you compare them, you'll see the one, you'll notice it then, but side by side, but...
Yeah, it produces nice colours as well, just as it rises above the horizon. So,
speaking of the sun and what you alluded to,
right,
the night's closing in.
Here we go.
Don't want to depress you too much, but we are just, as you mentioned, John, just past the solstice last week. The sun will rise tomorrow morning in Dublin at 4:59 a.m. It's very early, way before I am. So, but that is 2 minutes later than a week ago. So the morning beginning to creep in. But local noon is at 1:28 p.m., which is also 2 minutes later than a week ago. And the sun will be setting at 9:56 p.m., which is around about the same time. It's only a few seconds earlier than a week ago, but the morning is closed in just a tiny little bit. It's fairly not very perceptible now. But then we'll have, from that time, that is 9:56 when we have officially sunset, until 10:49, we'll have civil twilight at the same time as last week. And then We'll have nautical twilight, and that will end around about 20 minutes past midnight, which is 3 minutes earlier than a week ago. So what does that mean? Then, of course, we'll have astronomical twilight all night until the nautical twilight begins again on Thursday the 29th, about 2:30 in the morning. And we'll have no astronomical night until the 30th of July. What does that mean? That means there are 2 minutes less daylight than we had a week ago.
That's remarkable, tomorrow. Because it was only a couple of seconds either side of the solstice.
Yeah, and when we get to the equinox in September, the difference will be about 4.5 minutes a day, or 4 minutes 10 seconds, 4 minutes 20 seconds a day. Whereas at the moment it's only 2 minutes. So yeah, tomorrow is only 42. There'll be 42 seconds less daylight. The day will be 42 seconds shorter. The time between sunrise and sunset, which will be still 16 hours, 57 minutes and 33 seconds, so still a long day. You wouldn't, for most of us who are still asleep when the sun rises, and if you go to bed relatively early, like I try to, you won't notice it. But I tell you when I do notice, when you get to the third week in August, and it's 9 o'clock, say, oh my goodness, 9 o'clock and it's dark.
Mm-hmm.
Say, oh, that's definitely closing in. But of course, when it comes around again in March and the clocks go forward, you say, oh my goodness, it's 8 o'clock and it's still bright.
Yeah,
so appreciate it.
One of those things, maybe it'll change one of these years as they keep talking about, but we'll have to wait and see about that.
So if you're a meteor fan, the Debuted's meteors actually peak this evening. They're a variable rate. It's not the greatest meteor shower of the year, and of course with a 70% or so, 65% moon up, not exactly ideal. Oh, Saturday 1st is Asteroid Day, and also that evening Venus will be 3.5 degrees to the lower right of Mars. So there's a good pointer for Mars. If you don't know which bright spot in the sky Mars is, that's Venus will be to the 3.6% to the lower right of Mars, or you could say Mars will be 3.6% to the upper left of Venus, whichever way you want to look at it. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett, and our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. Love to hear from you, and of course we're available live on the web at dublincityfm.ie and as a podcast, but having a bit of trouble with the podcast at the moment, it seems, but we will check that out again.
My technology is not the same as yours. Anyway, good evening, Alan, and thanks for your text. SpaceX to launch the Euclid telescope for ESA. Despite yesterday, if you were watching or have listened, having lost a private spacecraft due to a faulty tug system. If we have enough time, I'll go into that a little bit more during the program as well. But I caught this morning, Ben, and it was a video of the total solar eclipse for next April 2024, where you're going.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, in 2024. And where it starts is in around the Texas area, just below Texas. And
yeah, in Mexico. Mexico's probably a better place, but I don't want to go to Mexico.
But personally, I was just watching the video and watching the speed of the dark area going through over the planet at the start of it, where I was watching 1,672 miles per hour was the shadow crossing. And by the time it got up to Newfoundland, it was 3,600 and something miles per hour. So it's just to do with the curvature of the Earth. And it was getting a more sausage shape and narrower as well.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's going to be fun. So the path of the totality, and what's the area you're going to? Have you chosen yet?
Somewhere around Dallas, San Anton.
Yeah, perfect. Right.
Somewhere around about there.
Yeah, that's the way.
That's the plan. Saving my pennies.
Your Dallas is just over to the left of center of the totality. And
yeah, I think it's, southeast of it, is it?
Yeah,
it's the path of totality.
Yeah, it covers a huge area, and it narrows as it creeps up across the country towards Newfoundland into the sea, where it disappears.
So you want to get nearest the centre as you can, because you'll have more time I think around about then, if you're in the centre line, it's about 4 minutes and 4.5 minutes of totality. Whereas the last one I was at in the US, it was 2 minutes 40 mm-hmm. seconds where I was. I think the longest is that's possible at the moment is around about seven minutes.
Yes, it's 6 minutes.
So, but today, or sometime this week, is the 50th anniversary. Back in 1973, there was a total eclipse, and there were some people on Concorde who flew into the path of totality and kind of tried to their best to chase the shadow of the sun, or the moon rather, on the Earth, and they managed to stay in witness totality for a period of 72 minutes, over an hour, because Concorde was going at twice the speed of sound, which is what, about 1,400, 1,500 miles per hour.
Yeah, so I remember
still couldn't match the pace of the shadow racing across the ground.
Professor Brian Cox on one of his programs, and he took off in a sunset, and because they were going so quick, they caught up with it again, and then he watched another sunset within 20 minutes thereabouts. It's just the speed of these Russian aircraft. It was a very, very old craft, and over twice the speed of sound, so it would have been going quicker than the rotation of the Earth.
Okay, it was the sunset, so he was heading... So the sunset, and then he headed west, but faster than the rotation of the Earth. So the sun rose in the west then, and then
as he turned around again, it just set again. So it was remarkable. A good fun to see. I don't know if you saw this yesterday. A house-sized asteroid passed fairly close to Earth. It's known as 2023 MU. And it was traveling at over 2,000 miles an hour, which is not very quick for near-Earth objects like this. And it made its closest approach to our planet. This is the Earth here in June the 25th, which was yesterday. And it was a house size. Usually we're talking about biscuit tins or fridges or cars or buses or things. But this was a big beastie altogether. And even with this, what we would call the incredible speed, it couldn't outrace observations by astronomers. So lots of people got to see it. Now, I didn't know it was around, actually. And it's really interesting, I think, to keep an eye on all these because one of these days, one is going to creep up through the sort of the direction from the sun, like the Chelyabinsk one, which just creeps in quietly. But it's only 123,000 kilometers from the surface of the Earth, and no danger. That's sort of between us and the moon, really, isn't it? And no danger in force. But I'm sure somebody will appear with a photograph of it, as it was photographable, because it wasn't going that quickly, even though it was going at 2,000 miles per hour. SpaceX launched 47 more Starlink satellites into orbit, and that was on Thursday morning last, after a pre-dawn launch from the Vandenberg Space Force base in California. And this was the Falcon 9 rocket with the satellites that lifted off into the darkness at 3:19 Eastern Time, which would have been about 8 o'clock our time over here. And the rocket's first stage also successfully returned to Earth and stuck its landing on the Pacific Ocean-based drone ship. This is a remarkable feat of engineering to get those back to land. It really is. I don't know if you ever noticed a green flash in the morning time or the evening time, just as the sun is either rising or setting.
I've heard of it, yes.
And it's probably something that you might remember from your early schools or in your science class. And sunlight, as we know it, which appears to be pure white, passes through a glass prism. And it reflects or bends. Different wavelengths, of course, of light are bent by different amounts. And this way the prism can spread out a ray of white light into the rainbow spectrum. So this is one of the reasons, in fact, it's the reason for a light green flash as it just rises or drops below the horizon. And it can be glimpsed just at the very topmost part of the sun when it's rising or setting. So that's, if you've ever seen it, I'm going out to have a watch of it because I haven't really seen this one.
I think I've seen little videos of it. You have to be quite alert. It is, as you say, a flash, so it's really instantaneous.
Yeah, and then it turns into that orange and then goes bright as it climbs up through the skies as well. So that's good. Anyway, the text line, 087-179-1032. Very good evening to you. If you've just joined us, we're here for another...
Seven, 8 minutes.
There we go. So you can just put that in your phone for the next time.
Now, John, we've heard about the dangers of the space travel, and if an astronaut is in space for any length of time, they seem to have affects their eyesight and affects their muscle development. That's why they spend about 4 hours every day doing physical exercises to maintain, to try to maintain muscle mass, and also it affects the bones as well. It kind of brings on a type of osteoporosis,
I think. Right.
But there is also evidence now that astronauts are more susceptible to infections while they are in space, and this has got to do with, they're saying now that space travel alters the gene expression in white blood cells, which weakens the immune system. Now, apparently, astronauts for on board the International Space Station couldn't commonly suffer from skin rashes as well as respiratory and non-respiratory diseases, and they're also known to shed more live virus particles, herpes simplex 1 and the virus that's responsible for shingles and other viruses like that. And these observations suggest that our immune system might be weakened by space travel, but they're wondering what can cause it. And they have shown that the expression of many genes related to immune functions rapidly decreases when astronauts reach space, while the opposite happens when they return, and they seem to return back to normal. And they think it's something got to do with the redistribution of blood. Because there's no gravity, there's a bit more blood. Say less blood goes to your feet and more blood to the upper part of the body. Why that should happen, I don't know. But they have done a lot of science research on this, and they have taken blood samples from 14 astronauts, 3 women, 11 men, who had resided on the ISS for between 4.5 and 6.5 months over the last couple of years. And the leukocytes in the blood, or the white blood cells, they were isolated from a little drop of blood, about 4 millimetres from each astronaut, 10 times, once pre-flight, 4 times in flight, and 5 times back on Earth. And different genes were found to differentially express different leukocytes. Do you remember your biology and your hematology and that? They're saying then that some of the genes that were dialed down when reaching space and back up when returning to Earth. There's a lot more work to be done. They say there is a silver cloud to this. The data show that most genes in either that these clusters return to their pre-flight level of expression within 1 year after return to Earth, typically much sooner. But it means also that the astronauts are more inclined to or more likely to pick up infections within the first month or so when they're back on Earth, and indeed up on the space station, because their immune system is compromised to some degree by what's happening in the body. So the next thing, of course, they're looking at their prophylaxis and how they're going to prevent this, on the, if it can be prevented. And, of course, that will help with science, you know, it can help us mere mortals down here or near too. See, all this scientific research and zero gravity is, a lot of it has a lot of paybacks for everyone, not just Velcro.
No, indeed. Velcro is great for everything. It just sticks things to stuff. Yeah, I went to see Chris Hadfield in the Bord Gáis Theatre on Sunday, and it's funny you should mention the blood going to your head. It's because the heart is actually closer to the head than it is to the legs. But he says that because there's no gravity pulling the blood down to your feet, it goes into your head, makes your head swell. And he says you've got a monster headache for weeks and weeks.
Oh, yeah, I've heard
that. And puts tremendous pressure on your eyeballs as well, which changes the whole shape of your eyeballs. So your sight is affected. And he did touch on the subject of the osteoporosis as well in the hips, and he would spend 2 hours on the treadmill every day because you have to. And there's other exercises. And every now and again, he said that you see somebody flying behind him, you know, just floating past as he was doing his exercise. He's some character. If you get a chance to go and see Chris Hadfield, he is one very interesting person. He was the head of NASA in Kazakhstan for 12 years. He speaks fluent Russian, fluent French, fluent English, touch of Mexican and everything. It's just remarkable. If you want to Google him, you can. But he's retired now at this stage, but he makes a living by, like, after dinner speaking or at little concerts.
And he did spend a lot of time. He used to come to Dublin a lot because his daughter was studying in Trinity College. I don't know now what she was studying, but used to be trotting around the city all right, a lot.
Nice to be retired at 63, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Would.
he's in between you and me, actually. So, yeah, so he's only 63, but he's got a huge amount of interest. But as I said, I won't go too much into it, but certainly well worth if you ever get a chance to see Chris Hadfield in concert. Yeah, and he did.
And he did sing his song.
He did sing his Space Oddity song that he sang up in space.
That famous little video of him playing guitar. Did he play guitar?
He had a guitar.
Oh, yeah.
He said the one that he played is still up there because they hang it on the wall with Velcro.
Yeah.
It's remarkable as well. But he was going through a couple of all the funny things that go on in the space station as well. But as I say, we won't go too much into that, but very, very well worth a visit as well. So,
okay, John, thank you very much. Very briefly, of course, Elon Musk has his reusable first stage rockets and now the European, the Ariane group are also working to develop a reusable engine for European rockets. And the early prototype, they call it Prometheus, and they've done some test burns already in France. It's a 100-ton thrust class, Prometheus, as I said, and it features extensive use of new materials and manufacturing techniques designed to reduce the cost to just one-tenth of Ariane 5's Vulcan 2, which is an upgraded version of the one that powers the Ariane 6. It burns liquid methane fuel, and you can vary the thrust on it, and it has multiple ignition capabilities, and they have additional layer manufacturing. This 3D printing features extensively in it and reduces the number of parts, speeding up production, reducing waste, reducing the cost, but you can reuse it and they cost one-tenth less. So that, again, will make space more economically viable for more people and more industries and more research facilities that want to do research and scientific experiments in zero G. It's all good news, and us Europeans will be catching up with the Americans or Mr. Musk and co.
Indeed. Just reminded by Alan with a quick text there. Chris Hadfield also threw a stowaway snake off a plane once. He did mention that. And he just jumped out the window.
Grabbed the snake and threw it off.
Well, it was in there. I said, what would you do if you were in the pilot seat of a test aircraft? I think out it goes, I'm afraid. So that's
you'd want to know what you were doing before you grab a snake.
Yes, certainly would, yeah. Well, I presume he knew it wasn't poisonous or anything, but yeah, well, thanks for that piece of information as well. And talking about chucking things overboard.
Snakes on a plane, for real.
Well, that was for real indeed, yeah. Mm-hmm. So just talking about throwing things overboard. The two Russian cosmonauts spent 6 hours outside the International Space Station last Thursday, and they were cleaning up the exterior of the orbiting laboratory by removing and tossing overboard a trio of no longer needed devices. And there's a photograph of them just shooting it back down towards Earth where it'll just burn up. It's a jettisoning, that's what it's called, jettisoning hardware. So they spent a successful walk outside the space station last Thursday.
Okay, John, thank you very much. That's all the time we have this evening. We'd love to hear from you. Do drop us a line by email. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And thanks to John for his items of news there and for driving the sound desk this evening. Thanks to James Sweeney and Conor Lennon. They put the show up on astronomy.ie website. We will check out about the
Yeah, just
podcast
to get it back again. Yeah,
but I believe it's back up. It's still up on astronomy.ie. Well, that's all for me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock. It's Bren Lynott with Threads, and 11 p.m. Ear to the Globe with Nigel Wood and his World Music Mix. And from midnight till 2 a.m, we have Dave Barry with his program called After Hours and his mix of jazz, blues and soul. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening and say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in tune, and the sun is a great spot on you.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.